One of my favorite stories is the little girl who came home from Sunday school for the very first time. She'd never been before. It was the first time her dad was anxious to hear from her what she learned that day. And she says, "Oh, we had a good day today. We learned about Jesus and the 10 tigers." And the father thought, and he couldn't think of any time Jesus ran into tigers. And he said, "Are you sure, honey? Are you sure that's what the story was about?" And she says, "Oh, it could have been 10 leopards." It's a parable we're all familiar with. You know, I've read that many a times, and it seems pretty straightforward. You know, the lepers are healed, and one of them comes back and thanks Jesus. And I've always just kind of read right through it and not paid much attention. But this morning, I think I want to take a few moments with you and really think about what's going on here. So we start out with 10 men who have clearly the worst disease you can possibly have at that day. The physical ramifications of leprosy then were horrendous, right? Leprosy attacks the body, leaving sores and missing fingers and missing toes and damaged limbs. In many cases, the initial pain of leprosy gives way to something even more terrible than that. And that's a loss of all sensation in your nerve endings entirely, which leads then to even more damage to your body parts because you can't feel yourself being hurt. Leprosy can take 30 years to run its course. And in that time span, entire limbs can just fall off. And try to imagine what it was like 2,000 years ago when medical treatment as we know it was non-existent. People who visit leper colonies today say that one thing sticks in their mind the most about having visited a leper colony: the smell. Putrefying flesh. Many lepers just have decaying flesh hanging on their body. And that smell of putrefaction is so intense. Now think of how bad this disease would have been in the day of Christ. It wasn't just the attack to your sight with the grotesque damage, you know, the nose missing and ear gone. And it wasn't just an attack to your hearing with the loud cries and the pain. It wasn't just the attack to your sense of smell with that rotting, decaying flesh. It's the emotional pain of a leper that would have been even worse than those physical pains. You see, a leper was removed from his family, removed from his community. There could be no contact whatsoever with his spouse or his children or his grandchildren. None. And it would happen immediately. They would be immediately removed from the village as soon as it was discovered, immediately removed. No time to say goodbye. Not an opportunity for your spouse to give you one last kiss. So lepers, they tended to stick together in packs, roaming around, looking for food, and begging people for help, for assistance. But they had to do everything from a long ways away. They had to keep a great distance from people. So they learned to yell in loud voices, both from the need to warn others that they were coming up from behind them and to beg for help from people who didn't dare get near them. What would it have been like to have been removed from your friends and your family for 20 years and to have been forced to announce that separation by yelling on a daily basis? Well, that's the situation we have here. A big group, 10 lepers encounter Jesus. And I think they hear him say the most unusual thing. Look at verse 13. So we see them yelling at Jesus. Imagine them standing on the other side of the road, maybe, you know, even further away, and they're yelling, Jesus, have mercy on us! We want to be we want to be well! And in verse 14, Jesus responds. And he doesn't say the thing he said so many times before to so many other sick people. He doesn't say, go and be well, for thou art healed. Right? Look at verse 14. He says, go and show yourself to the priest. Now, I'll back up here and kind of fill you in on the priest, right? At the time of Jesus, a local priest had duties much greater than just leading the worship service on the Sabbath, right? He was something of a local health official as well. And if a person was miraculously healed of leprosy, because there was no cure to leprosy, it had to be a miracle. If a person was miraculously healed of leprosy, it was up to the priest to inspect the body, to test for a complete removal of the disease, and to announce this person is now healed. So in such cases, the person would have been cleansed, and at that point, it'd be okay for the leper to see his wife again, to hold his children, to go look for work. If the priest gave him the okay, he'd be considered healed. Now Jesus says to these 10 lepers, go and show yourself to the priest. Huh? Why? They look down at their bodies and the hands of one man are still mangled. Another man looks at his leg and it ends halfway down with a filthy rag tied at the knee. Another looks at his skin and he finds it just as repulsive as it was yesterday. All of these men were no better off than they had been 10 minutes earlier when they had first spotted Jesus. But he tells them, go and offer yourselves to the priest. Look what they do. Look at verse 14. They go. They head off and in search of the priest. And on their way, it says, they were healed. On their way, they were healed. On their way, a hand grew back and tingled with life. A crutch fell over and a leg was there. And the leg was back. It was healthy and whole and complete. And the skin cleared up. The tiny hairs on the hand turned from snow white to dark brown. And they looked at each other. And I think that's when the screaming really started, right? And smiles broke out in their face. And there was cheering and just sweet, sweet madness. And they raced off in the distance, not believing that this nightmare is finally over. But I think in order for that miracle to have happened, those men had to start walking in faith before their circumstances had changed one tiny bit. If I was covered in leprosy and Jesus tells me, you know, go see the health official and be declared clean, I'd look down and I'd say, are you crazy? But these men walked. They went and they did it. I think that's an important lesson for us. I think we can't wait until our problems are over before we start to walk in faith. We can't put conditions on God. You can't say, Lord, as soon as my money problems are all straightened out, then I'll follow you. You can't say, Lord, once this issue with my family gets resolved, I'll start going back to meeting. You can't put conditions on faith. You have to just do it. Instead, I think God places demands from our faith upon us. Before anything else has changed, God might say, love me despite your disease. God might say, obey me despite your lack of ability. God might say, serve me despite your lack of resources. God might say, follow me despite the depression. See, that is the nature of God. A God who loves you so much, he'll give you the opportunity to be thankful when nothing about your circumstances gives you the motivation to be so. And I think that's the definition of faith, right? It's the very definition of it. If you praise God only on the good days, only in the best of circumstances, that wouldn't be faith. I imagine that some of you are in some pretty bad circumstances right now. So I'm kind of asking you that question. Are you going to be thankful to God despite your difficult circumstances? If so, then I think you have exercised faith. You have shown faith. Now look at verse 15. One of these 10 comes back to Jesus, and he praised God. He was thankful, and he was public about it, right? He was loud. He wasn't shy at all. Do you ever wonder why he was so loud? Well, he'd been forced to yell for 20 years. He didn't know how to speak quietly. He didn't have an inside voice, right? When he came back and fell at the feet of Jesus, he was louder than the normal person. He was praising God. I think that's another great lesson for us. To be sure to take the time to acknowledge God for his goodness. Be sure to actually be thankful. And don't be shy about it. Be loud. Gather everyone together for a prayer of thankfulness. But only one of the healed lepers came back. Only one caught himself in the midst of celebration and remembered to return to Jesus. He reversed his steps. He put his family on hold, he put the priest on hold, and he came back to the cause of his celebration. His response and his life situation were unique, but in the simplest sense, what he did, thankfulness led to action. And it turns out to be very important. Look at verse 17. In verse 17, Jesus says, where are the other nine? Do you ever think about what Jesus meant when he said that? I mean, he had just told the nine to go find a priest and go present yourself to a priest. He had never commanded that any of them need to express thankfulness. Jesus had never said that they should return to him, their healer, and be thankful. But it sure appears that's what he expected. Which makes me think, what kind of action is Jesus expecting from me? I might say a nice prayer of thankfulness, but what action am I doing in my life that shows my thankfulness? And it also makes me realize that not everything we do is a commandment. Jesus seems to expect certain actions from us, even if they aren't explicitly commanded. If we say that we're thankful, and we don't exhibit that in our daily lives, it really begs the question then, are we really thankful? So based on what Jesus was looking for 2,000 years ago, I think the best advice is to take that step of action. Don't just say you're thankful, but look for ways in your life that you can express in godly actions towards others that you really are thankful. Look at the last verse there, verse 19. Or more specifically, I want to look at that one word, verse 19. In verse 19, Jesus says to this thankful man, he says, rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well. Well, that's not really the case, is it? All 10 were healed. They all were made well. So you can look at that word a little bit closer, right? This word, made you well, it's interesting. It's not a medical term. It's not you know, well in the sense of your health, right? The Greek word here is sozo, and what it really means is saved. The Greeks used it for people who had escaped a dangerous situation. Sailors who survived a storm at sea and had been saved, they would say sozo, they were sozo. Matthew 1:21, the angel told Joseph to name the child Jesus because that name meant that he would sozo his people. He would save his people from their sins. And in Romans 10, when Paul describes what happened to a person who publicly professed that Jesus is Lord, he uses that same word. He says, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. So we're not talking about him getting better from his leprosy. We're talking about his eternal salvation. And Jesus tells him that his faith has saved him. Did you notice in verse 17, Jesus said all 10 were cleansed. All 10 lepers were cleansed. The wonderful work of Jesus can cleanse all of us from our sins. But only to the 10th leper does Jesus say that his faith has truly saved him. It's the faith that saved the leper. And it's our faith that saves us.